Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, John? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggling.
Yeah, yeah, this is Cassidy the Hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where's that on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Damn right, I'm not a West Coast gangster. Fuck right, man. I'm from Miami, Florida. That's in the South. That's as South as you can go. I was raised by Spix, by the Latin community, and that's what I am. I'm a Latin motherfucking thug down.
Y'all the problem.
I'm from Miami, Florida. That's what I am.
Fuck the whole industry, nigga, I swear to God, shit just won't change. I took me some losses and man, that's it. When I'm the only one that I could blame, I was being cautious, I stayed in my lane. Niggas, they talk on my name, but I think all I have, and I really go harder when I'm feeling pain. Shit in the veins. Lately been feeling like I lost my mind. You won't catch me lacking, it's me and my nine. Your niggas, they wantin', they think that they fine. If it ain't about money, then no, it's my time. I don't fuck that your bitch, she hitting my line. So that little bitch, she can get in the line. So that little bitch, throw it back at the wine. I ain't worried about trust, I'ma worry about mine. I'ma do what I want, I'ma get what I want. I'ma eat me a bitch, I'ma eat a croissant. I'ma talk me my shit, got the game in my palm. Gotta watch for the snakes, there's some snakes in the pond. Gotta watch for the hate, yeah, the hate on my mom. Hate that I'm trapping, they still got a job. Yeah, they hate how we moving, we move like a mob. Anything that you needed, we do got it all. I don't care what you feeling, don't care what you living. Don't care what you selling, don't care what you stealing. I could be a hero, I could be a villain. Cause I'm from Miami, with chicos de grilling. The only thing I know is tilling and tilling. I don't see you people, there's no interference. There's nothing in front of me, I see a clearance. I'm gonna be straight up and you're gonna hear it. People be hating, and trust me, we see it. No coming between it, you live and you get it. We living for love and we living for freedom. If I say I'm good, then you're gonna believe it. I'd be wrong if I would say that this life was so easy. Cause I've been stressing for so long, this life just won't defeat me. I just keep playing on my songs, the only thing that heals me. And I ain't saying nothing wrong, I just want y'all to feel me. Cause I've been waiting for so long, I'll always be the real me. I want the world to sing along, I want the world to need me. Saying that they real, but they change like change of seasons. And if I slap you in your face, then you gave me a reason. Bitches saying that they good, only good at gold digging. And I ain't want my bitch around that, yeah, that's my decision. If you don't like it, then be gone, I'm worth one in a million. But don't go crazy when I make it and you see I'm chilling. I can't believe I almost quit when I just started winning. I think the Lord, but in this life you always end up sinning. And I've been riding on these beats and yeah, I always kill him. And when you riding on this, I know you love the feeling.
Y'all already know what it is, man. Episode 545 underway of Off the Cuff Radio. I'm your host, King Eric the Media Assassin, and this show is sponsored by Buddy Boy Entertainment, Fleetwood and the Cotton Pickers, School Ball Radio, Jesse's Boutique, Core Financial. Got my host, T-Max, with the facts in the building. What's good?
What's going on? What's going on, man? Another into our audience. Another fantastic Friday of OTC, the freshest frequency on the internet radio. We are live and direct in the dopest means possible. King Eric is your pilot. I'm the co-pilot, and we are ready once again to give y'all what you need and what you want all the time, anytime. And, King, once again tonight, We have an old friend back with us again. We had him on a couple of years ago. Shout out to Jeter K, 183rd from MMG. You know, shout out to Ross and the whole crew, Slab, you know, everybody. This guy right here, from when we had him on a couple of years ago, really, really gave us some gems about perseverance, about triumph, about tenacity, about pushing forward, about what talent does when you mix hard work with it and it equates to success. Trop Da Vinci is definitely an inspiration in how he carries himself as a man, as a professional, and as an artist, not in that order. And once again, he's back with us tonight, and hey, the man's been busy, definitely doing big things. We are so humbled and appreciative to have him back on the show again. Ladies and gentlemen, Trop, don't stop. What it do, man?
My family, I appreciate that, man. My family, Off the Cuff Radio, man, I really appreciate y'all. It's a pleasure to be back. It's always an honor at the utmost. I have the utmost respect for y'all. Shout out to everybody tuning in, and thank you guys for having me.
Thank you for wanting to come back with us, man. Welcome back.
It.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. It's always love, man. Y'all, come on, man. Family, man.
Definitely, man. Look, la familia. Si, man. Mucho.
La familia.
Man.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Look, you've been working hard lately. Of course, shout out to the other two musketeers of the crew, Nick Garcia and John Austin, man. You know, so we were lucky to have all three of y'all on the show, man.
We can line it up. It's only a call away. We can do it. Definitely.
And we got to shout out Luxury Curve, too. I know we got so many shout outs, but shout out Luxury Curve as well, man. But definitely because he was inspired to come on our show from listening to you, you know, and he reached out to us. So it's about what we do here in terms of really spreading the word and about spreading that spirit of benevolence all over. Man, look, let's get it like a Ferrari in third gear, man, going down a lane, you know, with no brakes.
That's right.
You've been busy, to say the least.
Just trying to stay afloat, man, trying to keep the boat going, man, you know. Really, this past year, I've invested into myself fully as I opened up my own studio, you know, all owned by me, and I started my production company. Really just went all in on my business, man, as far as just investing in an infrastructure, building it out, paying for the builders, paying for, you know, the equipment. And now it's like, you know, as the years progress, going on the second year of me going on this journey, I'm really learning how to, like, scale and, magnify my impact on my business and as well as on my brand. You know, it's my business, but I'm also, like, pouring into my brand. And that's what I've been on, as well as my production, juggling my beats and my routine with, you know, reaching out to artists and establishing different connections and stuff like that, which is the main piece of the pie. But I just took time out to just invest into myself, man, because, like, you know, I feel like that's what's most important. Having when you have a brand and a name to yourself, that's so much more powerful. And, like, it's like you can make money and you can be successful in any field if you have some kind of brand awareness to yourself, you know. And it's important to me, so that's the journey I'm on.
Man, as I said, to hear your story from, you know, from how far you've come from when you initially started, you know, of course, when we had you on a couple of years ago, you know, you were in the middle of, like, really, really, really making that run, you know, and now you're a full-fledged business owner in terms of, like you said, having your studio and investing, going all in on yourself. And
definitely. We're good at saving money, too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's the most important. You know, one thing about it, and all the years we've done this show, King and Trop, you know as well as I do about what it is to have an idea, but to have the ambition and the entrepreneurial spirit to make it happen. You know, so many people, they dream about it, but they just dream. They don't do. And so many people try to do it, but they don't understand the nuances in terms of what it takes. And like we said so many times on social media, y'all, everybody thinks this shit is easy, and it ain't.
Oh, no, it's not for the weak heart, man. Definitely not, man. And I could say that, you know, I learned this past year how hard things can really get, man. And it's like, man, it's like every day is a storm. You know, it's always going to be a battle. It's like crazy, man. It's crazy how I heard this guy, Kevin O'Reilly, they call him like Mr. Wonderful. He talks about how just, you know, being an entrepreneur and being a business owner is not, people think it's easy because they see it online and they see what, obviously it's not kind of cliche, right? You don't see the hard work behind closed doors, but like those moments of like where like life really tests you, and it's like those moments where you constantly have to get up and keep grinding and keep grinding and keep grinding, even if you don't see results that day or the next day or that week, it's like that's the true test, you know, of an entrepreneur, I feel. It's like, and a business owner in any business, it's just like, you got to keep going and keep grinding and keep grinding and keep, you know, even if you don't see results, you know, that's just, it's just crazy. I mean, man.
Yeah.
And you got to find a way pretty much to find that motivation, because, you know, in this business, it could really be daunting at times. Like, it could be like, you feel like you just want to throw in the towel. And I'm pretty sure everybody's been through that stage, but what keeps you like, man, I got to keep this thing going, man. Like, what keeps your drive going?
Man, with me, that's a great question, by the way, man, because I really, I would love to hear this from different people, you know. But with me, it's like, that's a good question. I want to give a good answer. Like, I would say first and foremost, I always look for something to educate me or enlighten me, that like some, it could be a podcast about eating healthy, it could be a podcast about overcoming, you know bettering your mental health, whatever it may be. But I always look for like knowledge or insight that I didn't have before, where it's like it kind of makes me think back and it's like it like shows me something new, like damn, wow, okay, that makes sense, damn, that's true, that's right, you know. I enlightenment, I look for enlightenment first, right? I look for some enlightenment, and that kind of like stirs up some you know, some creative juices in me, where it's like, damn, you know what, let me get back into this mode, you know. And then I would say also, like being active, exercising. I try to go to the gym every morning, and I also skateboard, so I feel like exercising, kind of like if I'm not feeling it, maybe one day, like, you know, I'll definitely like get in the gym and just work out, and just like that kind of changes my mood right there, you know. And also, honestly, taking a break from the music sometimes too, taking a 2 or 3 day break, kind of refreshes me, because, and also changing my environment as well. Like, you know, I don't like being cooped up in my studio making beats in the same place 24/7. I like to be in different studios, or I'll produce anywhere, man. You can go by the pool and just pull up a speaker and just vibe, you know. So like those kind of new sceneries, new environments, some enlightenment, some new knowledge that I didn't have before, and just staying active, you know keeping that energy flowing, you know. It's like that's what I would say keeps me motivated. It's like, and then also it's like sometimes it is daunting. It definitely is daunting, and you want to throw in the towel, and it's like, man, am I even on the right path? Sometimes it's like, but then it's like the next day you get a call that's like, or the next day you make a great, you do something great that it's like, man, you know, it was that much worth it. It's like those lows get low, but then those valleys, those peaks are even higher. I mean, just as high those peaks are, the lows are going to be low again too. So it's just like, I know that I'm understanding that there's always going to be up and down to life, and it's just navigating through those lows. And it's like, if it's like, okay, I don't feel like doing this right now, you know what I'm saying? Let me step away from it and let me go do something else. Let me go for a job, or let me, hit the beach, or let me hit the gym, or let me watch this movie or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, decompress my mind a little bit, you know?
Yeah, and that's one thing about it. When you're thinking about the rigors of it, as we said before, everybody sees the finished product, but they don't understand the persistence, the perseverance, the production that goes into the process. Shout out to one of my homegirls, Shaquay. She gave, she said there's an old saying that the best time, there are two times of the best time to plant a tree. One is 10 years ago, and the next time is now. Because you're doing it with the preparation of what is going to come next. Because anytime you plant that, anytime you have that agriculture of interest, you have to sow it with the strength. You have to water it with your love and your wisdom. And then it grows from the genius of what your knowledge has brought to it. It is cultivated all through experience. And there are going to be those weeds of doubt and of naysayers. But that's where you use your fertilizer of faith to where you're going to let it grow regardless. And like you said, you know, when you think about what you said, Trop, about how you'll, you know, you'll be in the studio and then you'll decide you need to come out, I'm thinking, okay, this guy is like the opposite of Dre. And this is by no means a shade of Dr. Dre at all, but it's like, as you heard stories about how Dr. Dre, I think Dr. Dre said his personal record, I think he stayed in the studio, I think, like, probably like a whole maybe week or 2 weeks straight and didn't come out. He and me are looking at each other like, how the hell did he do that?
I mean, man, I still have those nights, man, where it's like I'll be locked in and locked in, locked in. I mean, I'm not going to lie, I'm not going to say I haven't, but I would just say that, you know, I still have those intense nights, but it's like, for me, at least, everybody's different, but for me, for Trop Da Vinci, it's like I know that at some point I'm going to burn out. You know what I'm saying? And it's it's like I know where I can push myself, and I can push myself, and you know I always strive to, you know, of course you got to push yourself if you're creative, you're competing with these artists and this even just in entertainment in general, it's a competitive field. So it's like you always got to compete at the highest level, even if you're in the NBA or whatever it is, any kind of sport. It's almost like a threshold. It's like you don't want to like overpower, like, you know, just burn yourself out like a computer. It's going to overheat. It's going to fry out. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, and then you're really not going to want to do anything. So it's like I kind of just find that medium. Like I'm trying to balance, you know. It's like I'm finding the balance where I'm still productive. And if it comes to those nights where it's like, okay, I got to lock in for these 48 hours. We're finishing an album. It's go time. Cool. Okay. But my routine, outside of that, my routine doesn't change. My routine is, and it's a strict routine. I like just this past year, I really developed that for myself because of my business and everything. It's like, I developed a routine for myself, man. I get up early. You know, I'm out the house at least by 7 o'clock in the morning. I'm in the gym. I'm back at the studio by like 9, 10 o'clock in the morning. And I make myself 5 to 10 beats a day. So I do 5 to 10 beats a day. After I do that, I work on some music. I cut some hooks or I'll edit some videos for my blog. And then from there, I go skate. I step out the studio. I go outside. I skate. I be in the sunlight. And then I've realized that is just what keeps me going and keeps me like balanced and happy, because I've been in the studio, haven't been home in 3-4 days, been locked in the studio, haven't showered in 3-4 days, just locked in, brain hurting, eyes burning, just going in, you know, 15-20 beats. One of these got to go. And don't get me wrong, there are those nights, and when you're developing a skill and you got to sharpen your craft, you know, you're going to have to climb that hill, you know. But I feel like and I still have a lot to learn. I'm in no way, shape, or form I'm still where I want to go. You know what I'm saying? I'm still trying to get me, you know, my goals and stuff. It's just, what works for me is a balance, but sticking to a routine and being disciplined in that routine to know that, okay, when I get in the studio, these 5 to 10 beats, I'm going to go in. Nothing's going to distract me. I am focused on this. And that's that, you know? My phone's on Do Not Disturb. I'm locked in, you know? All my focus is on that. And then we're on to the next, you know?
Yeah. And that is the difference in a creative process. One thing we want to implore to all of our listeners out there, there's a difference between, like he said, burning yourself out and then when you're in a creative zone. Because when you're in a creative zone, that adrenaline is just running because you know you're in a certain spot. So you're not worried about anything with that because you're already moving. Once you're moving, it's fine because, you know, you're in that zone. It's like when Michael Jordan in the 92 finals against the Blazers, when he was in the zone and he hit them 6 threes in the game, you know, it's just, or like when Steph Curry will just have one of those ridiculous nights where he bomb pools for 50, he's just doing it.
Exactly.
You know, it's just when you're streaking like that, you don't interrupt that continuity. Even for us doing the show, we'll take time off here and there, you know, because we may just decide, you know, with shows we've done like, what was it, King? We've done like the most, what shows, how many shows we've done in a week, King? We did like maybe the most we've done is like 3 in 1 week or something like that.
Hey, we did 4 straight.
Yeah, we had like 4 straight at one time. So, yeah, even we know when we got to unplug and just relax and recharge. But it's something about understanding, because when you work too hard, the quality suffers, because it is hard to maintain that level of focus and continuity and consistency without having to take a breath from it. And that is important to pace yourself, like, because this is a marathon. This is not a race. Creativity is in order, so you cannot just snap your fingers and it just comes.
Right,
if you're a creative
magic,
person,
man.
Yeah. You know, when it comes, it's just going to happen when you get a moment, you know, of that eureka, and then you execute from it. In terms of what you found along the way with this, in terms of really breaking down the minutiae of the method, how have you seen yourself and other producers in terms of exercise and that type of ethic? Who are some other producers that you've been in touch with or met along the way who have utilized those same methods of control, discipline, and most importantly, rest when necessary?
I would say off the top of my head, I would say Southside. I would say watching his videos when I was a lot younger, those are one of the things that would inspire me, like his 808 Mafia TV episodes and not only just him, but there's this other guy named Fuse that I think he's the vice president of 808 Mafia. These guys are like I just used to see them on blogs and videos, and just all they would do is just make beat after beat after beat after beat after beat, and it's like, while they have their kids in the back, like, you know, yelling, screaming, playing with toys, like, they're just locked in, beat after beat after beat. And it's not even really, it's producers. So I would say those are the producers. And then I would say also, like, artists like Lil Wayne, and then obviously Ross, who I'm very close to. But I remember before I even met Ross, like, I used to, you know, Lil Wayne was, like, my favorite rapper, and he used to always talk about, he's in the studio, when he's out the studio, when he's on the road, he's in the studio, when he's not in the studio, he's in the studio, he's in the road, he got a studio in his tour bus. Like, work ethic. Like, I, as a kid, like, I knew, like, I was like, when he came up with the whole best rapper alive thing and started like rapping all over everybody's tracks, like, I don't know, something in me just knew that he's in there in the studio 24/7, just making song after song after song after song. And eventually you start sharpening your sword to where it's like, you got something, you feel me? And that's my mindset. I was like, I've always told myself, like,
And that's why I was locked in, you know, making those 15 beats and just staying up and locking in and eyes burning and all that, because I was like, man, I got to get my stuff to quality. I got to get it sounding just like Southside. I got to get it sounding just like these producers that come through and play beats for Ross, like Beat Billionaire, like, you know, Bink, like all these guys, like, that are just, like, on this top-tier level producing with Skrillex and Jay-Z and all this. Like, I'm like, man, I got to just lock in and just make and just get my craft right, you know? And that's one thing that those are the guys that, you know, really instilled that in me, you know, for sure.
Yeah. And I think people, too, have to understand there's a fine line you have to have of working hard and then not working at all. There was one artist, I shall not say his name because we don't shade people on this show, but, you know, he's from this area, my hometown, Hampton Roads, Virginia, and he said about he's not in the studio unless it's time for him to do a project or for him to do a paid feature. And I'm thinking to myself, well, that's kind of maybe why you ain't really blown up like that, because you're not even really out there doing anything like that. You know, I'm like, you know, you got to be out there. You're only going to get as much as you put into it. And you should always at least be you should always be in your bag trying to do something to expand on the groceries, you know, the people may be shopping for. You know, there
right.
are certain people like Jay-Z who can, Jay-Z can just decide, okay, I just want to go in the studio. I mean, what he did with Blueprint is legendary. I mean, the story that they did that in one weekend, I mean, that's still a, like, craziness of proportions. But, I mean, Jay is one of those people Jay says when he's locked in, you know, and I always read about how Jay does his routine. Jay says when he's locked in and he goes into the studio to record, he lets his hair grow, and, you know, he doesn't come out until it's done, until the album's done. And as a side note, he wears Biggie's, Jesus piece with the Cuban. So it's, we all have our quirks, our routine about how we prepare ourselves in terms of what our mental exercises are. But it's also, too, we understand this, even as journalists, the history of how we read are the elements of what we use in our exercise to prepare. There's never a time we're not watching the news or on social media. Not necessarily I wouldn't say not necessarily, because this is a standing rule on Off the Cuff that we never are on some tawdry or tabloid shit. But we're always watching to see what's going on. We're going back in articles, really reading about the history, so we have the ability to give further context. Just like you, you know, in terms of you watching other artists, how they work, it gives you more of an idea about how you can expand upon your craft in terms of the toolbox of which you use to, you know, go about it. When you look at a lot of artists today, Trop, what do you feel some artists are missing that for them to get to that next level of success?
I think work, for starters, work ethic. Let's start with work mm-hmm. ethic. I feel like since there is so much, and I'm not shading anybody, but it's like, I'm just like, man, because there's so many artists nowadays. Everybody's an artist. I don't know about over here, like where I'm at, South Florida, everybody's an artist. So it's like, how are you going to differentiate yourself? Well, in my opinion, we can start by locking yourself in the studio 24/7 and doing nothing but cranking. Right now, it's like, if you really want to make it, you have to you got to get in that studio, outwork everybody, and then you got to show out a little bit. So it's like I don't know if y'all saw that Chris Rock stand up. He talks about showing out. You can either show out or be excellent. And he's like, to make it in Hollywood, you got to be a little bit of both, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah. That's true.
That's what I believe. Like in a way, you know, you gotta show out a little bit, but you most importantly gotta be excellent. So, and I feel like excellence comes through repetition and discipline and hard work. So, and a lot of these guys just want to be famous, which I understand. Money follows attention, right? But it's like you gotta have the work ethic, man. You gotta have the work ethic, you know, if you really have meaning behind your stuff. So work ethic and how you present yourself in a different way, you know, and you know, I feel like how your visuals are, what's your message, is there some substance behind your music, you know what I'm saying? That I feel like you gotta hit them in the souls, you gotta mess people's minds up, and that's where I feel like you can really start. You start by impacting people's feelings and their frequencies and how they're feeling and what they're thinking. And then it can grow, like you said, watering the seed and just watering it with faith. Because, you know what I'm saying, like, you may not see what's going on underground in the dirt, but then when that flower pop up, it's like, oh, man, you know, it's all the satisfaction you want.
Now, you know, with technology is playing the key to how the industry is changing. And you're seeing a lot of crazy stuff occur, man. Like, we're seeing the AI, where you're seeing all these machines emulating these rapper voices so well that you can't even tell who's who these days. Now, you being a producer, do you see this going to be a change for the better or for the worse for the industry?
Man, I think if they don't work with it, it's going to be some people are going to be out of a job, you know? like it's just like, I don't know how we're going to be able to be. I feel like it's coming. Like, the AI wave and the AI thing, I feel like it's going to happen, you know? But I think that we can team up with that AI software and, you know, be that much more effective, work that much quicker, you know, get that much product out, you know, because it's like having loop makers, you know. If you're a producer and you got loop makers, the amount of time that cuts between making beats, you know, substantially, you get to finish stuff a lot quicker. You might finish 10 beats in an hour, you know, 2 hour less, you know, versus you got to make everything from scratch. It's going to take a longer process. You may not have all that time on your hands, you know. And also working with different loops and sounds, it changes your style up a little bit. So, and it could be for the better. So it's like, I feel like if we work with it, if we find a way to work with it, use it to our advantage, then we're in the green, you know. But if people, somebody wants to be lazy and let AI take over you, like, best believe it'll take over, because it's machine software. It's software, you know. It's like, you know, it's like, I feel like we need to find a way to work with it.
Yeah, I think what's happening is, and this goes to show with even with the country wasn't prepared for how fast technology done progress over the past 10 years now, and now it seems like the industry is falling behind in the loop.
Yeah, man, I mean,
go ahead, Troy.
No, I'm saying I was gonna agree. I mean, definitely. I feel like, and maybe y'all can agree. Like, the industry always kind of falls behind in the loop. I feel like they're always there. I feel like, you know, like, they did it to Jay-Z, man. They did it to Drake. They did it to a lot of different people. You know, oh no, we don't believe in this. We don't want it. Nah, it's okay, we'll pass. And then look what happened. Jay-Z is the biggest, most wealthiest, probably the most successful rapper in the history of hip hop to this point that we know of. And then look at actors like Mark Wahlberg. Like, you know, he went through his ups and downs, and look at him now. You know, he's like doing a bunch of positive things and stuff. So I think the industry, is my opinion, I think the industry always is late to the party because they want to see it be successful first, and then, oh, okay, we'll jump on the bandwagon, you know.
to kind of take some side notes, you know, in terms of the gift context, what Trot was saying, y'all, about it, to really understand this. When Jay-Z was first shot, when Jay-Z and Dame were first shopping Jay for a deal when they were trying to get one, initially they went to Def Jam. A lot of people forget that Reasonable Doubt was not released on Def Jam. It was released on Priority Records. And they eventually did get a deal with Def Jam. But and anybody who wants to cuss me out in the YouTube comments when we have this on the show, if I'm wrong, go ahead. We can handle the smoke. We sit in the smoking room. But I think Russell at the time, Russell didn't think that Jay, you know, was – he wasn't feeling Jay like that. So that's why the first run, Jay didn't get signed. Now, the second run after the Reasonable Doubt made a little bit of noise, they did eventually sign them to Def Jam, just like Nas. Believe it or not, Russell passed on signing Nas to Def Jam. And wow. Columbia ended up getting Nas, you know, for those first few albums before Nas would eventually sign to Def Jam in late 2005 when, you know, Hip Hop Is Dead was released in 2006. When you look at a lot of people, I mean, Harrison Ford, when he did Star Wars, if I got the story right, I believe he was like the third or fourth option in terms of it to be Han Solo. Because everybody else that George Lucas came to about it, they did it. They thought they. If y'all ever saw that Family Guy episode, the spoof, the Star Wars, that is an absolutely 1,000% true story. It was a spoof that Family Guy did of Star Wars. I cannot remember that episode. It was Blue something. Funny as hell. One of the best. Shout out to Seth MacFarlane. One of the greatest. Cartoonist ever in American history, but it was true about this is a quick history of Star Wars. When it was released in 1977, the movie script itself, when Lucas took it to the studio, they thought that the movie was so way out there, they thought it was so inconceivably crazy. A science fiction space drama gave him full control in the sense of basically if this falls, you're going to lose your ass on it. And they gave him complete control of it in terms of basically he assumed responsibility for everything in it.
Wow.
Which means when the movie hit, and his spawn pretty much, I think, damn near, 10 to this day from over, 45 years ago, and it has spawned roughly about 15 movies in that franchise and a whole bunch of licensing, shitload of money behind it. Basically, Lucas cashed in on it completely and has total, you know, of course, he since sold it, you know, but for that time that he owned it, basically, everything he had, everything that movie earned, it came directly to him.
Wow, that's big.
You know, so he basically, the studio said, we'll let you shoot it, but, you know, you're gonna assume the responsibility of this thing tanks. And King, this is more your element. Remember with WWF when they did the first WrestleMania? Remember that?
I remember WWF, but I really remember WWE.
Yeah, that we're showing our age. So that was WWF when they first did the first WrestleMania, and that was, I believe, in what was that year? Is that King 84? 84,
like 84, 85, one of those years.
Yeah, and Vince at that time, shout out to Vince McMahon, he had a little bit of money saved up from what he had done with the promotion, but basically he mortgaged his whole company on a pay-per-view event that people would actually pay to watch. Mm. And Vince to this day will tell you he would have been living out of his car had it not been successful, but it turned a profit, and it became so big in terms of the phenomenon that basically
we still talk about it today.
They had one of their biggest, and they had one of their biggest numbers of all time this past weekend. So it goes to show you got to bet on yourself.
Right. Yep. Y'all heard about what happened with WWE and the UFC. They merged.
Yeah,
now.
They're buying it. Yeah, they're buying it. Yeah. I thought they said that's like a five point something billion dollar
takeoff.
Yeah.
Oh my
yeah.
God, that's crazy, man. That's crazy, man.
It's, you know, one thing about Vince K. McMahon, people will say what they want to about him. He has a special place with King and myself because that man really helped make our childhood awesome, along with NWA, AWA, all that whole wrestling culture from the 80s. But Vince really was the one that took the bull by the horn.
Yeah. From Carolina, so you know that hustler spirit is there. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But he really, but the fact is, you know, he may have not been perfect the whole way in his career, but one thing about that man, for what he's going to get off of that share of it, he deserves every penny because he's built that brand into a place where, I mean, it's wild to think about because ultimately when we think about ownership, when we think about what we build, it's a complicated issue. And it's something because when you build it from the ground up, yes, you have an emotional attachment to it because, and we're all men of color here. So you may know where I'm going with this.
Right.
There's the element of what it is in terms of enterprising, in terms of what we keep for ourselves and what we sell. Now, we are from the Al Haymes school of capitalism, so we are all about the money. So by the same token, we are about ownership, and we are about making sure that we maintain a certain level of control. When you think about a trough in terms of how business runs, what are your feelings about artists or entrepreneurs that do build a brand and do eventually decide to sell it?
I think ownership is key. Mm-hmm. I think definitely the more you own, it's like when you said if Vince McMahon if he hadn't kept ownership, he would have been sleeping out his car. Like, and that is so true, man, because it's like ownership is what that equity that you own is going to keep you afloat, not just you afloat. It'll keep money flowing to you for your family, for your kids, for your future generations. And the moment you give that up, it's like, you know, it's gone. Here's a bunch of money, but what's 500,000 to, you know, generational wealth? Like, you know, and it's like, that's what I believe. I believe ownership, man. Ownership. If you got to give up a little bit of equity, try to give up the least equity for the most money. And y'all can agree to disagree, but don't give up that. Don't give up everything, man. You can't, man, because you're left with nothing. You're left with nothing and a big check, but money will run out. It's current. Currency. It flows like a current. It leaves. It comes back. It leaves. It comes back. So I think that ownership is important, man. Like for sure, you know, ownership. The more you own, the better you'll be, you know. And you know, like it depends though. If you got to give up some equity, if you got to give up something that you own, just make sure you work twice as hard to get it back, and then keep it. You know? So
yeah. I mean, we were thinking about Future last year, you know, when Future sold his catalog, and I think they said Future somewhere got like around 80-90 million for his whole catalog. And I'm like, you know, and it seems like this is always something, especially, you know, for especially the people of color, and yes, I'm speaking about black people, and you know, specifically about how there's talk about how in the industry, entertainment industry, we don't own anything, especially in music.
because we're so quick to sell. You know, but when we think about it, you know, years ago, you know, Berry Gordy, the founder of Motown, he sold it years ago. I guess when you become that wealthy already from what you've done, there's a point, I guess, maybe you want to live your life. You don't necessarily want to be caught up in all of the everyday, you know, hustle and the obviously the stress of having to run a business where you can just take a paycheck and retire. And we're by no means against that, you know, but there is such a thing as if you really want to maintain a certain vision in terms of creating a culture, I do think it's important to where if you are a true representative of the music, of the business, of the community, you keep it there because you want to have people lead by example in terms of showing there is power in ownership. It is about understanding your vision when nobody else does and maintaining control of it. We've seen situations where we've seen businesses go to other people and they got ran into the ground. I mean, I'm going to be real. So on the other hand, we see people like Snoop Dogg. Shout out Uncle Snoop. I mean, he owns Death Row now, you know, and it's like it's great. And he's, you know, navigating this as he goes along in terms of how he's going to really cultivate it, because Snoop said he's really about trying to really bring that whole spirit back of what it meant in the best way. And if y'all are old enough to understand, like we are, to understand what that impact of when Death Row dropped in 1992 with the Chronic, man, and then all the classes that came after that, just the era, as we say, that just the era was different in the 90s. But when you heard a Death Row release was coming, you knew it was going to be some fire.
Right.
That's the spirit. Even when we look at, you know, even though he gets maligned a lot, Puff Daddy, but what he did with Bad Boy Records in terms of how he led it. And we have to say this because we want to be as accurate as we can. Puff Daddy never owned Bad Boy Records. He didn't own it in the beginning. I do believe he was given the actual ownership later on. But when he started it, Bad Boy was a black music division under Arista. That was the urban music department of which he was charged with running. Puffy's done a lot of shit. We all know. We'll even say what you want about him. But when Puffy got a cold, when they gave Puffy that job, Puffy worked it. He worked it.
Definitely.
And look what he turned it into.
That's crazy.
So in terms of all of this, in terms of ownership, Trap, I mean, you owning this, and throughout all of this, you found the time to drop an album in all of this, man. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I mean, I just felt like I needed to do it. You know, I put something together. I wasn't trying to put something together to, like, be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go number one and stuff. No, I just put something out that I just wanted to get off my chest. Like every song on that album reminds me of a specific time in my life. And I just wanted to put it out because I said I was going to put it out, and I had to do it. You know, I had to do it. I just put it out there. So, you know, it's out there for those who like it to enjoy it. And I'm glad it's in the past now, because now I could really focus on what I got going on next. It's just something that I felt like I needed to do. And, yeah, so the album's called El Tigre. And I hope, you know, those that are listening to it, it's on all platforms. Y'all could listen to it, vibe to it. If you relate to it, if it makes you feel some kind of way, you know, feel free to share it with me. I'm open to all criticism, you know. So, just wanted to put it out there, man. It's just a small little body of work that has a lot of emotion packed into it, and I just let it off my chest, really. I just, like, therapy, you know. It was really like therapy for me. Just
definitely
let it out to the world.
What was the process
in
terms of it? Yeah. What was the process in terms of picking, in terms of some of the features that you had on it, and just how you, what do artists have to understand about the features in terms of how they make sense for an album, and also sequencing for an album as well?
Okay, so I mean, I just kind of just go off of vibes, and I just go with what I feel, you know. Like for the features, those two songs were done in the studio with those two guys, Michael J and Rob Anthony and Westbrook. That was all done in the same day. It wasn't like I sent that off and then they sent it back. No, it was just like we were in the same room. We were at my studio or at a studio or one of, you know, some studio, and we were just pulling up beats, or I actually made all the beats on the album. So, I was just making beats, and then we just caught a vibe to those, and we vibed, and that's what was created. It wasn't like I didn't really think too much about how, you know, oh, I'm gonna try to get this person on it. I'm trying to get this person on it. I just kind of like was in the moment with it, and every song on there describes to me a specific moment in my life, you know. Especially 2022, because 2022 was like a really challenging year for me. I've had a lot of challenging years, but for some reason, 2022 stuck out as really the most, one of the most prominent. So I kind of just packed all those emotions into last year, but some of those songs were made before, but they fit, you know, for the whole idea of it. And that's why I called it a tigre, because it's just like, you know, like my company, Eye of the Tiger. It's like, I just, like, you got to be fearless in this game, man. You got to be fearless. You got to be relentless. You got to overcome every obstacle if that's what you want. If what you want to strive for is success, if what you want to strive for is to be great, if you want to create something that's going to touch the masses, if you want to create something that you're going to be proud of, that, you know, that you hopefully could help at least one person with, then I feel like you got to, you know, you gotta just, you know, you gotta be fearless, man. You gotta be, it takes fear. It takes being fearless to kind of just put yourself out there. And I'm not doing the typical rapper stuff or just like, you know, hey, let's go shoot a video. Nah, like I might shoot some videos, but I'm more like just, it's more release therapy, like you said to me. It's really what I enjoy. Like even if I was broke, I would still be doing music. I would still try to like, I would still be making beats and putting hooks on my beats, and then making songs out of them. That's the vibe I catch, you know.
Yeah, and that's important, man. You know, because it's always about understanding the aim of it. This is what a lot of artists have to understand, and producers, like you said, what we're going back to earlier about, like what Chris Rock said in his skit. There's a certain amount of audacity and even ostentatiousness that is an intrinsic link in show business, because there's that excess that people find entertaining. Now, there's a line to this that a lot of people don't always understand in terms of where you don't cross, because your ambition should never be a foolish intent to have the masses look at you for being a clown in a circus, because then nobody takes you seriously.
Right.
But there is a certain boldness and audacity to be great, to be seen, that people will recognize as you being determined to make a impact in whatever the endeavor is. This is something a lot of people get it wrong on social media. There is a difference between that rapper who has been working tirelessly to have people hear him or her and just wants people to listen. And then there are people that will just do stupidity, like that dude in Texas going around just kicking people's cars for no reason. That's foolish.
Right.
And especially in Texas, he's going to get shot behind it. We're just putting that out there. He needs to stop that because, no, you don't do stuff like that. There are just certain things that you don't do for foolishness and trying to get attention. And while we love social media, the problem is at times that the bar has been lowered for what is considered entertainment because everybody now wants to be out there in the sense of what they feel is the ways to be seen. All attention is not good attention.
Exactly.
But one thing we do respect more than anything, at least on this show, is we respect people like yourself and so many countless others who have a genuine desire to make an impact and to be respectful of the culture and to hold tradition in the most thoughtful and, you know, genuine of ways. Because we understand what goes into it being a creative. We all are, collectively here. So people don't understand how you're trying to really articulate your vision to have everybody see it. Because some people are simply going to be blind because they don't understand it or just because they're haters and they refuse to. And that shouldn't stop you from, no matter what, going forward.
Right.
But
right.
We understand. But one thing is, we understand it being an independent because that's what we do with this show. But we will never, ever, ever dismiss anybody for giving an honest effort. As the old Japanese proverb said, and I learned this from Power, y'all, it is the effort that counts. And that is what matters most. So pretty much now that you've gotten the album out, you've gone through, you've weathered the storm, you've navigated your course. How is from the reception, the responses you got to the project, Trav? How's the reception been? Are you looking maybe down the line to possibly partner with a major, depending on if everything at the business is correct?
I'm not gonna say I wouldn't, but I'm not gonna say I wouldn't, but I'm gonna say that I'm not like. I know that I don't need the label, you know, because basically I don't need the label because I know I have label relationships, right? I know a lot of people that work in the label, you know, from Sony to Warner to 300 Atlantic. Like, I know people in those buildings, so I kind of know the system that they use. And that's why my whole mentality is like, I'm on like some Soft Walker, like some Russ, Nipsey Hussle. All these guys were independent, you know what I'm saying? And they had the labels dancing for them versus me doing the dancing for the label. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going into the label and being like, hey, sign me. No, like, I want them to come knocking on my door and be like, man, we want to sign you. What do we got to do? You know, because... And I'm not even looking to, like, because I could take the funding that the label gives me and I could do everything that they do because I know how it works, you know? And that's why I'm grateful for the knowledge that I've learned through these years of traveling and working with Maybach Music and Ross and working on albums and meeting different people. I really feel like I have a strong insight of what it takes and what really goes down. And I understand why all these people preach about independence and, like, you make 3-4 times as much money as being an independent because it might take a little harder. It might be a little harder. You might take a longer route. But when you build that catalog, when you build that leverage, there's so much you can negotiate so much more in your favor because it's like, you know, you don't even have to sell them your music. You can license your music to a label if they like it that much. You know what I mean? Hey, let me just license this album to you. You guys distribute it. I license it to you for a course of, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, and then I own it again. You know what I mean? So it's like, and then while you license that album, all of the stuff that you don't have licensed under the label starts going up, and that's all your money. That's money straight in your pocket. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's just leverage, man. It's just leverage. Like, if you're, I've heard somebody say this, I'm not going to, I don't remember who, but I heard it on a podcast or something. It's like, when you get your first deal and you really need a deal, you're going to get screwed. Like, your first deal is going to be a bad deal, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Most likely. Usually it's a bad deal. You're getting the shorter end of the stick, and the label's getting the better half. So, you know, why not build some leverage, do a little bit of groundwork, get your feet wet, get your hands dirty a little bit, like build up that catalog and have these people come and knocking on your door, dancing for you. Oh, we want to sign you. What do we got to do? Yeah, man, like, you know, but I'm not knocking anybody. Some people do great things with the money, the first deal, you know, Young Thug and all of them, Free Young Thug, man. But, you know, like Future, Thug, those guys started off with record labels. Well, Future started off independently, but, you know, Thug definitely went through labels and stuff like that. So it's like, I just feel like it boils down to the work ethic and what you do with it. But if you want leverage, if you want ownership, you want to keep ownership, you want more money in your pocket, you want control, then independent would be the way to go, and then licensing. Me personally, I'm independent. I got great relationships with labels, and I feel like that's just as good as being signed to them versus not having to owe them all that money. And I could still work on my music. I could release whenever I want. I may not have the budget that these labels have, but I know it's gonna get there. You know what I'm saying? Through gradually steps, you know, one brick at a time. You know, I'm trying to really like Young Dolph this stuff, man. Rest in peace. But I'm really trying to Young Dolph this, man. So I'm not here just knocking on labels' doors like, hey, sign me. It's all good. I'm going to keep pushing, and one day we're going to meet. You know what I mean?
Man, one thing about
especially
it.
Especially now with these labels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say, especially now with the way these labels work nowadays, man, it's like, it ain't like it was before in the 90s where they'll do the majority of the legwork. They'll cover the production parts. They'll cover the radio spins. And they don't even do one-third of that anymore.
That's true.
And they really don't, man.
Yeah, they don't even do that anymore. What they basically do now, because I think what happened, the business model changed, and they got spoiled with how those big-time sound scan numbers came in the 90s. Like, you know, niggas was doing, like, 999,000 in one the first week and 1.4 million the first week, and they didn't have to do any legwork. So now it's to the point where they don't want to put in no money and then the creating stars anymore. They got spoiled by those numbers. That's why they want people to just make songs like certain people that's doing those numbers. They don't want to take that effort to make artists.
That's a good point, man, for real. And it's like, with that being said, too, it's like, since we're going in such a digital age, you can literally find somebody that runs marketing or runs the radio promo. You could build a relationship. You meet them in the club. You meet them at an event, and you got their phone number. Why would you need to pay $500,000 to somebody at the label to take your record and put it on radio when you could just call the radio person directly? You know what I mean? It's like with this whole digital era, you can meet somebody on Instagram. They might reach out to you. Hey, we love your stuff. Can we put this on the radio? Sure. You know, the paperwork, right? You're going to see this. You're going to see the publishing from that, you know? And it's like, honestly, I heard, I think it was Dame Dash or Jermaine Dupri say this. The labels are becoming less important, you know? You know, they're definitely with the labels that are going to be real important, that I believe is where this is where it's going to. This is what the future is, besides the AI and all that stuff. The future will be these labels ran by these independent artists like Diamond with Russ's label, Nipsey's label, you know, I think J. Cole has a label as well. These guys, you know, Paper Route Business, these guys that started it independently and now are you know, what Master P and Birdman started,
in a way, you know, with the whole independent thing.
They're taking it to a whole nother level, and these guys are going to be the ones that are that those companies and those entities are going to be the ones that are going to have the choice to partner up with a Warner or a Columbia or a Sony and make it bigger. If you really think about it, Sony and these companies need these guys if they want to keep dominating in the music industry, because it's like, obviously what y'all doing is not, I mean, history repeats itself, but the course of history is changing. Like, y'all, the system that y'all running isn't working as effective. The cat's out the bag. Like, we know it's not, we know, like, half the work isn't being put in. We know these artists are getting shelved. We know if you're not important to these artists, to these execs or whoever, if you're not a favorite, then you get shelved. Then you get overlooked. Then they don't shoot your video. Then they push your album back. You know what I mean? So it's like, the more independent labels we see being successful and really reaching the masses and really becoming super wealthy and being like, yo, these are top dogs, these labels are they're going to come knocking on your door. How can we do business together? Because they're going to need them at some point. Because you're only going to get so far signing a viral act. You're going to have a hot moment, but can you have a hot career? Can you have a career that lasts? You know what I'm saying? For real, man.
Okay.
For real, man.
Okay, nigga, we're going to need a book after this, too, because you got a lot of... We're going to need a book, Trop Thought, because...
I want to write a book, man, but I really feel like I could, man. I could really write a crazy book, man.
Man, but what you said... Oh, we're just putting this out there because you mentioned Sauce Walker. Ooh-wee! Shout out to...
Ooh-wee, drip.
We need... Look, shout out to all of Houston. Look, Trop, we need you and Sauce Father to do a track together. God, Sauce has been killing the game for like the past. Shout out to XXL for putting me on to him, because they featured him on their Facebook page some years ago when he did a video with Social Man for Casper, and I've been a Sauce Father fan ever since. Man, I mean, that dude is just one of the most crazy in terms of his videos and his appearance, but that dude in terms of lyrical fire, Sauce Walker is just unbelievably talented. And they say that really he just does rap because he likes to do it. He's not even really taking it serious as a career. He just likes to do it. And that's his, but he just enjoys the rhyme. But I'm like, dude, if he really decided to go, and when you look at it, like you said, Trop, because this ties in from a level of business in terms of labels. We can even tie it into another one of your hometown brethren, Lamar Jackson, with what he's doing, negotiating his own contract with the Ravens. When you realize that you're the bag, then that means you understand you're the income with the interest. Now, this is a tricky game people have to play, in terms of how you gain the interest to get interest and make interest, because you have to know your leverage in terms of what your marketing worth is. We will always tell people, don't sell yourself short, but don't overestimate your worth either. There is what you call indispensable and disposable. This is speaking back to what you said about label priorities in terms of how artists get albums out and how some don't ever get it. They're on February 31st. But it's also something about the element of having control. We've seen the independent game, as we know it today, has been going on for over the past 20 years. Shout out to Cormega, when he started Legal Hustle, when he just, we all know about that situation that happened at Def Jam with him and Steve Stout, how that all went awry, and how Cormega said at the time he was just going to do it himself. We've seen the Lox, you know, after they got their deal with Bad Boy, they went independent. After they left Rough Riders, they went independent. You know, as a group. So being independent is a great thing if you have the audience to do it.
And it's about understanding that you're going to, you know, you got the garden and you're going to make that grass grow, you know. But also, too, we also tell people in terms of that business, be calculated and be careful. Because just like chicks on Instagram at times, or OnlyFans, you're going to get humble when you're trying to do a private channel, and it's all relative to business, but then you find out how you may not be as popular as you think you is. So you definitely have to kind of know exactly.
That's a humbling flex. Before you start.
Yeah, it's a humble flex, well, for real.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, Trop, you obviously have rolled with some heavy hitters in the game. What has it been like when you actually got to meet the label people in terms of the executives who really are the green lighters for projects, who really say whether it's a no or whether it's a go? What do artists have to understand about building relationships with everybody in the if they do get a chance to get a label meeting or just talking to people in passing?
In general, you need relationships. This, I feel like this industry is more than 80% relationships. It's like 20% talent, 80% relationships. Like, that's my opinion. You really got to know people in this industry. And then with that being said, you gotta do the footwork to meet these people, or, you know, network online to meet these people. And also, most importantly, be remembered by these people, because you can leave an impression, but is that impression going to be a long-lasting impression? And I mean that in a good way. I don't mean acting a fool. I mean leaving an impression that they remember you. Same thing as an artist, even if you're an artist that's trying to put himself out there. Okay, cool. But can you be remembered? Are these people going to remember your music? Are they going to remember your song? So that part. And then also, I think everybody that works at the label is great. You know, it's just sometimes you get, I could understand why, because there's so much work that these A&Rs and these execs and these CEOs have to do. Vice presidents and all that they have to do, right? But it's like, you got to understand that me as a producer, or me as an artist, or me as a engineer or a DJ or whatever, I'm really outside. Like, I'm in the lab with 20-30 artists. I'm watching what they turn up to. I'm watching what they bop to. Like, I'm in the club. I'm seeing what these girls are dancing to. I'm seeing what the people are reacting to. It's like, I don't know, man. It's hard to say, but it's like sometimes they got to listen to that outside person that has that. I'm not just an outside, like, if you pick and choose whose advice you want to take, but it's like if somebody from an out, sometimes you got to listen to that outside voice, because you may be so embedded in your work at the building, at the office, it's like you kind of forget, you know what I'm saying? You kind of forget, or you kind of stray away from something that may sound different, or may be like not in the lane that you portray that artist you're working with to be like. And that might be the hidden gem right there, bro, where it's like, try this, this is probably what's been missing, try this, you know. And it's like, I feel like sometimes you got to listen to that outside voice, because exec could get really caught up in what they do at the office, at the building, in the meetings and all of that stuff, putting these albums together, lining up everybody with the paperwork, with the lawyers, putting this artist on this song and this and that. And that's, they're super talented, but it's like when something new comes around, people are so quick to repel it. And it's like, and I don't believe in that. I kind of like raise an eyebrow at certain new things and new sounds and new avenues. And it's like, wow, okay, like, let's try it, you know? Why not, you know? So I feel like, you know, people got to get more comfortable stepping outside the box.
It's about being instinctive and not losing the instinct to make it sharp. It's like that scene in Taken when Liam Neeson, when he gives John Claude, he's like, that's what happens, John Claude, when you sit behind a desk,
You get relaxed. You forget things, like the weight of a gun when the bullets aren't in it. I mean, that's the thing, because you never want to get relaxed where you become complacent to where you're oblivious to what goes on around you, because part of when you look at what's going on, everything is constantly evolving in terms of how the music is going to reach an audience. Does that mean all of it's good? No. But that means a lot of it isn't bad either. When you look at what Griselda has done, shout out to Westside, Benny, and Conway. Look how long it took for them to really work, and the labels didn't really believe that that era, that that style of hardcore New York rap could be commercially viable. And this whole, and the Griselda crew across the board is killing it. Even so much so that they each have independent labels and each have acts that are like killing it. But it's like everybody gets caught up in this whole, what we've seen over the past few years is that the metrics of music, because of digital, of everything, because of the digital age, internet, social media, everybody uses that as a shortcut and most dangerously as a fad, because like you said, fads come and go, but good music will last the test of time. And these labels are sometimes only caught up in terms of what they feel will only be catchy. But I'm like, it's not about what's now, it's about what's next. And that's where you have to get out there and really see, you DJ, you produce, you're a studio owner, you're in touch with the pulse of what is going on in the pavement in your city. So you know what's going to beat to shake the block up. And definitely with your acumen, Tribe, we could easily see you being a label executive. You definitely got you've been around one of the greats in Rick Ross, you know, who is just one of the most outstanding entrepreneurs of this generation, you know, and most importantly, talking to you with the requisite intelligence you have, that has only been fostered by those people around you with their wisdom, with Jeter, Ross, Slab, that whole crew. That's the most important thing, to be around good people who allow you to grow, and most important, empower you with that wisdom to engage and move forward.
Man, also talking about Ross too, man. People, if you really look at it, man, he has a very underrated fine body of work if you really want to sit back and analyze it. Like we're talking about Deepin' in Rap, Teflon Don, Port of Miami, Triller, Port of Miami 2. I ain't even mentioned the mixtapes like Black Dollar, Renzel. Like he built quite the resume, because you know, even around that time where if you had 50 Cent coming at you, man, and you survive that, shoot, that's going to show you right there how music can stand within its own.
Yep, for sure, man. No, it's definitely, he definitely got that body of work, and there's mad gems in that body of work, even with the books too. The books are crazy. Shout out to Neil Martinez, man, for sure.
Yeah, man. Shout out to him with both authoring both of those books, The Perfect Day to Ball Stuff and Hurricanes, and of course writing Gucci Mane's book as well, the autobiography of Gucci Mane. Tell Neil, by the way, too, we still want him on the show, Trop. We still want him on. The landscape of it, who are the artists out there that really move you, that you really, really would love to work with?
That I would want to work with musically?
Yes, sir.
Right now, I mean, I definitely want to produce some stuff for, like, Future. I definitely want to just tap into, like, I definitely want to tap in with, like, Meek Mill, Future, Meek Mill. I would say, like, there's a lot of artists, man. I got so many on my list.
it's a lot. But I also want to, like, I definitely want to, like, start doing, like, I feel like the next thing after I conquer more of my music goals, I definitely want to, like, tap into the movies and do, like, soundtracks for movies and work on, like, sync licensing and stuff like that. So that's something I'm really looking forward to. And I actually secured a sync license with BET, so I got one under my belt. But I definitely want to, like, get into, like, doing soundtracks for movies. Like, I heard Metro Boomin did the soundtrack for, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was the next Spider-Man movie. Into the Spider-Verse. Yeah, they got him doing the soundtrack for the whole movie. So, like, that's big to me, man. Like I love watching movies, you know, going to the movies and watching movies. So it's like that's something I definitely want to tap into.
Man, look, if Leonardo DiCaprio can ever get this Scarface reboot off that they've been talking about for like the past 6-7 years. We definitely need to get you on it.
Man, that'll be nuts. That will be nuts.
And they've been trying to get that movie off the ground. I don't know what the problem is with that script. All I know is that he was supposed to be behind producing it, but it's like, man. But that's just the evolution. I mean, when you figure the RZA, you know, when he did the joint for The Man with the Iron Fist. You know what I mean? You're seeing a lot of the – it's branching out now where, yeah, you know, you're seeing how everybody now is really – movies are one thing that's never going to go away. And definitely for that type of situation, you definitely – and one thing about it, man, hip-hop has become the biggest export in the world from the United States. When you look at commercials, when you look at a lot of TV shows, it's got a hip-hop vibe to it. I mean, ESPN is pretty much kind of even really started going to more of the hip-hop vibe with the music in their commercials. So this is a culture that has exceeded all the way beyond its roots of a 1520 Cedric Boulevard in the Bronx in the 1970s. This has become a worldwide phenomenon of which everybody is part of. And it's about just fashion, from fashion to language to media. It's omnipresent. It is ubiquitous. When you think about what it's done for you, Trop, and how it has enabled you to live your dream, what does the culture mean to you?
Man, it's just honestly a way of life for me. Honestly, the culture raised me. Like I grew up with a single mom. You know, my father passed away when I was a kid, so like I really turned to the music, and I turned to hip hop artists like Kanye West and Ludacris and Lil Jon and Ross, Pharrell, Timbaland, like those guys, Eminem, like those guys were like superheroes to me, you know, like when I was a kid. Like they literally, if somebody said they weren't rocking white socks because it was whack, I wasn't rocking white socks because I thought it was whack. Like that's how strong this whole, like, the culture and the hip hop culture and everything has a grip on me. It really just raised me. Like, it really raised me, you know? Like, for real, it was my father figure, for real.
Yeah. I don't think we can give enough appreciation because of... And I guess that's why when we look at the divide today, when we see... Because the biggest misconception, and we've spoken on this show so many times about it, it is not us from the older generation hating the younger generation, because we want to see the babies come up and do well. You know, we want to see the kids have a good time. We just want the kids to have a respect and understanding of what it is. And just because it may be easier to make an entrance does not mean that you go in and act nutty because of it, because there's a responsibility in terms of preserving it and respecting it. And that's all we want to see, you know, but we want, most importantly, the history in its full context to be understood, not only from the music, but from the business aspects. Look at how hard they had to work at a time where it was considered an underground phenomenon. We look at a different iteration, even going back with James Brown, where it could really be started with the ad-libs, you know, with the soul. Even maybe throw a little bit of Johnny Cash in there with a lot of stuff he did with some of his songs, you know, that have rhymes. You go to The Last Poet. You go to Sugar Hill Gang. You go to Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. You go to LL Cool J. You go to Public Enemy. You go to N.W.A. You go to Tribe Called Quest. You're going into Moni Love. You're going into Queen Latifah. You're going into Hammer, Spice One. You go to DJ Quick. You go to Nipsey. You're going to E-Rule. You're going to OC. You're going to Gangstar. You're going to Compton's Most Wanted. You're the list is endless. Diamond D, Fat Joe, Biggie, Tupac,
so many dimensions.
Rascals. Yeah, I mean, you know, Smith and what? I mean, from Scarface. I mean, Luke, Two Live Crew, Jeezy, Ross. I mean, Wayne, Master P, you know, Currency.
Yeah.
Everybody has been touched from it, and everybody has made a contribution that has been essential to the preservation of it. We have museums based around this. We are in, as of this day, April 7th, 2023, not on the spot of August 11th, 1970. 73, not on the dot date yet, but we are in the 50th year, y'all, of hip hop history. This is momentum.
Hey, T-Max, hold on 1 second. I think we got a call, man. I think we got a call from a 445 number. Let's see what we got. Want to chop
okay,
it up with
445, you on the air with us?
Yes, hello. I'm Nay Rodriguez. How are you? Lady B Promotions. How are you guys doing this evening?
It's Lady
We're
B.
Doing
with
great.
B.
How about
you?
Yourself?
I'm great. I was just taking it all in. You know, you guys definitely have some valid points. As the gentleman was saying, you know, as far as the independent artists are concerned, there are a lot of guys who are out there who would rather be independent. Also, some of the female artists that are out there, they really don't want too much to do with any labels because of the things that you guys were saying. And I run into a lot of artists, you know, when I'm out and about doing my thing. And as you said, you know, you can get pretty much anyone's number. You know, it's about building relationships and rapport. And one of the discussions that I often have is, you know, even with some of the artists that I've managed, I've been a part of their management team. We can have the connects, but, you know, ultimately it's up to the artist. You know, when you get in front of these labels and in the industry, you know, you're the impression, you're your own brand, and it depends on how you market, how well you market yourself, and how well you carry yourself, for that matter, as to whether or not you'll be able to go, you know, as far as you could in your career. So a lot of it counts, like you said. It's 20% talents and 80%, you know, relationships. Building those relationships, they mean a lot, you know, because there are green lighters out there who, you know, they have the say as to whether or not it's a go or a no. And if you want longevity, you know, in your career, you really have to make sure that you're carrying yourself well in this industry, because it means a lot.
Definitely. I agree 100%.
Yes.
From your side as a manager, Nay, and my IG follower and friend as well, thank you for coming in. What have you found in the management side of how artists need to have proper representation in terms of making sure that their business is straight?
Well, it kind of goes back to what the gentleman said about that outside eye. first and foremost, you have to know the artist. And I think a lot of people jump into management, no disrespect to anyone, but they jump into management not understanding that. And that's very, very important. You have to always stay in the know as well, because, you know, you have to know what's hot and what's not as well as a manager, because there are certain times where you need to tweak your you need to tweak the artist's image. You need to, you know, tweak some of the things that the artist is doing. You know, this may be an avenue or a lane that the artist is comfortable, you know, working, but sometimes you have to switch lanes, especially if you want to stay in it for the longevity. If you want longevity out of your career, then you're going to have to be willing to make the necessary changes to stay in the game, because we have a lot of one-hit wonders out there, you know, as well. And you don't want to be that. If you don't want to be that kind of artist, then you're going to have to be up for change when change is necessary and when it's calling. So as, you know, a manager, you know, these are the conversations that you have to have with any artist that you're representing, any artist that you're managing. You have to have these conversations up front, so that way you'll know whether or not it's even, you know, worth the investment.
Mm. Yeah, and one thing about
it. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah, it does.
Managing isn't easy. You have to put in a lot of work when you're dealing with artists, you know.
Yeah.
It's like being a grown babysitter.
Somebody said, oh, I had to laugh at that one, because, you know what, someone said that to me before. It's just, you're pretty much, it's I'm trying to watch my mouth here, but. Sometimes it could be. It depends on the artist, as I said. You know, you have to get to know the artist. You know, you have to know what kind of character and personality that you're dealing with. You know, and then you have to move accordingly. You know, but I've been in situations where, you know, that part I haven't had to deal much with that part. You know, but I do know that there are situations where I've heard managers say, you know, like, good luck with that, because the horror stories that I've heard, you know, had a lot to do with, you know, babysitting artists and things of that nature. And to me, that's just overkill. You shouldn't have to babysit an artist. When an artist knows what they want and what direction they want to go in, as a manager, you're there to help guide them in that way. The other extra stuff you shouldn't have to do. But unfortunately, you know, when it becomes personal a lot of times, when you get too involved in the personal life, that's when you find yourself in a situation where you feel like more of a babysitter or mother or father rather than a manager. And that's where you have to kind of like, you have to draw the line. If not, then you'll be on call 24 hours, 7 days a week. And that's not what managing is all about. It's a little different than that.
Damn sure it doesn't mean the manager is bigger than the artist, where he talked more than the artist. Like a certain rapper and his manager always say more than, we're looking at the rapper like, dude, he's supposed to be managing you, not being your spokesperson.
Absolutely, absolutely. You would be correct in saying that. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be with artists who are strong artists. They're independent, but they're very strong. And, you know, they have a lot of input as to what it is that they want to do and where they want to go. And my role is just to get them there. You know, some managers don't know if they want to be an artist or if they want to be a manager. So then you have that constant clash. And if there isn't, there should never be a constant clash between management and the artist. You know, somewhere along the line, you have to decide if you're going to be in the background or if you're going to be in the forefront. And, you know, I've been fortunate, as I said, to be in a situation where I'm able to give my input, but I don't have to deal with the headaches that some other managers have had to deal with. Because I make it clear in the beginning. I make it very clear in the beginning. There are certain expectations that, you know, when the artist and I first meet, we sit down, we have these conversations, and we discuss what it is that, you know, we expect from one another. So when the expectation is clear, then that road to success, to a successful relationship, a business artist-manager relationship runs smoothly.
Yeah. And that's important, man, because we see too many times where, like you said, Nay, a lot of these artists, this is one thing that we have always stressed on the shows that we have done. Number one, you get what you pay for. So if you want to have a good career, you're going to have to put your money up. We don't care where that money comes from in terms of if you were a street entrepreneur or whether you are a trust fund baby. Make sure that finances are applied in a right way in terms of don't be stingy with the cents because you ain't got common sense if the dollars don't make it. So you want to make sure you get the right people around you. Don't have homeboy network around you that they don't know the first thing about the record industry. Don't have Omar who thinks he's all ostentatious with the wisdom because he got an internet education, but he's really ignorant. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Get a lawyer. Right. Get a real lawyer. Pay for a real lawyer.
Absolutely.
You know, make sure that your whole network is professional grade like GMC that's built for it tough. It's Teflon John because you got to make sure branding, because these people, the manager and your network are directly responsible for your career.
Absolutely.
So that cultivates the branding of your image. And you have to have people that understand what you are trying to present and share the vision. You can't, because next thing you know, you done put a snake in the goddamn house that's venomous.
Talk
and he gonna poison
it.
Everything, you know, because we got somebody in here who, but we gonna talk about it. We gotta keep it real and off the cuff. We got some people out there that when they get in, you gotta be careful about knowing the pedigree of individuals. Some people,
absolutely,
they don't always make it as the act they want to aspire to, and they're okay with that. And their thing is, if I can't do it, well, let me take the lessons I've learned along the way and be the teacher for somebody to push them forward. Let's be pragmatic in the progress. But watch for the snake that's going to sabotage because they're bitter about that cold reality bite of what they took when it didn't work for them.
Yeah.
You know. You know, so that's important in all aspects, man.
Absolutely. You have to know your team. You have to, like you said, it's important that when it's time, you have to separate the business from personal, and not everybody is meant to go with you or to grow with you for that matter. So just because this is boo-boo from down the street, like you said, and they know a load of something, when it's time, you know, to sit down and conduct business, you need the right people in position. You need the right people in place because that can mess your entire situation up. And not everybody is rowing with you. Some people are on that boat and they're drilling holes as you're trying to move forward in your career. And it's not a good thing. So you have to know the people that are around you. And you have to make sure. Also, you have to. It's very, very important that you have the right people in place. That is key, having the right people in place, because not everybody is happy for where you are or where you're going for that matter. And there are some people who will, you know, are there, you know, just tolerating you. Not everybody's celebrating you. So in those instances, you know, not everybody that's on the sideline is cheering, not in a good way. Some of them are wishing for your downfall, and if they can, you know, cut in at any given point and wreck shop, they'll definitely do it if you allow. So you have to be keen and you have to be sharp at all times, and you can't take any of it personal. When it comes down to your brand, definitely take that personal. You can't be lackadaisy. You have to be willing to do the work. And one of the conversations that I have with any artist, and I need to know this up front, is if they're willing to invest in themselves. You know, some people think that, you know, it's the manager's responsibility to foot the bill for your career. No, I would never give anybody that kind of power or authority over my brand, over my career, over my business. No, you have to be willing to invest in yourself, because then it means something. Then it means something, and that means that you won't settle for anything, that you'll push. you'll keep pushing until you reach that goal, until you reach that level, you know, of success that you desire to have, that you're seeking. You won't get the right result when you just place everything concerning your career in somebody else's hands. Ultimately, you know, people have lives of their own, you know, and sometimes, you know, there have been situations where people have gotten lost in the mix because they've depended too much on someone else to get it done. And as an artist, you can't depend on someone else to get it done for you. You have to be willing to put in the work as well.
Man, you're talking to three
individuals. Your hand up in this, can't hold your hand in this business.
Yes.
Look, Nate, you're talking to three individuals here. One, you know, who owns his own studios, work with the best, and two individuals with an independent podcast to where we all understand the motto of get up and go get it. You know,
yes, absolutely.
We got it off the cuff. We got a lot of friends. Shout out to so many of them who have helped us get guests, and King and myself, you know, but, you know, and we do a lot of leg work. We work in tandem with everybody. We work in concert with so many people.
Right.
We got Trop on the show a couple of years ago. That was because, and we're still so humble, Ross's road manager, Jeter, personally asked us to bring him on the show. And we were like, hell yeah, we'll bring him on the show, you know. But Jeter saw something in Trop that he really wanted to get him out. And we were like, yeah, we want to help in terms of helping him, you know. And Trop is just.
Yeah, there's no politics involved with it either.
No.
Yeah.
And to see Trop grow, to see his drive, to see the determination. One thing too, we got to throw in this conversation too. People don't understand. Pick up the goddamn phone sometimes when people call, because you never know what an opportunity is. Trop will always pick up the phone if he's not busy. He will always pick up for one of us if he's not busy. You know,
unless his credit card collected. Because he's going to change the numbers up on you. Unless his credit card collected.
You know, but a lot of times, yeah, you know, but people got to be accessible. And some people think when they get to a certain place in the industry, like, well, such and such can't, you know, I'm like, because those things, you never know when a call may come for an opportunity. You never know when an opening may come up. You never know if somebody's putting your name in a room that you're not in to push you forward. And they may call you back. Like, I talked to such and such. It's like, yo, they want to holler at you. I was talking. We had a random conversation. I'm like, yeah, you know. And, but that's called networking. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, that is paramount. It's about respect.
Absolutely.
Above all.
Yes.
And also, most importantly as well, building on what you're saying, you got to pick up, not only you got to pick up the phone, but if I was a producer or a rapper, I'd jump on every podcast or every show relatable, because you never know. Then the big leagues will start calling you up. You can't have that Hollywood mentality, oh, I'm only going to do press with Hot 97. I'm going to do Hot Press with Vlad and all them. Now you got to hit all these big small platforms first. Make it accessible to the people.
Yes, you can't sleep on anybody, because here's the thing. And I call my people always say, "Well, Nay, you got to chill." No, don't tell me. These people will tell you to not go out, but they are going out. So you can't. You got to quiet those voices. Like, you can't listen to every bit of advice, so called advice that comes your way. So like you said, I call myself an equal opportunity promoter. If it's something that I feel and I know that's worth promoting, I will promote it. I don't care if they have 15 followers, 15,000 or 150,000. You have to be equal and fair across the board. And like you said, that Hollywood mentality is what get a lot of doors shut in people's faces, as well get them put out of rooms. That's what gets people put out of rooms, coming in there with this Hollywood mentality, oh, I can't do this because it's not that, or it's not that or the other. It's about building relationships. You never know, that person that may only have 1,000 listeners on that podcast may have 1 million tomorrow. You never know. And this is just someone that you've spited, slighted, or shaded, you know, because you felt that it wasn't a part of, they didn't have a big enough audience for you to communicate with them. You know, we didn't all start off with thousands of followers. You know, we didn't all start off that way. We were in a room at some point. We were able to network with someone who may have spoken us up, and then from that relationship, we built several other relationships that in turn, like you said, spoke us up in some rooms or some atmospheres, you know, that paved the way for us. So, you know, we have to stay humble at all times, because like you said, you know, sometimes you think you're popular until you go out there on your own and then you find out how popular you are, you know. So we got to be careful of that and remain humble at all times. And by all means, put that Hollywood mentality to the side, because there's been a lot of people who have gotten embarrassed from having that kind of attitude. It's not a good attitude to have at all.
Mm-hmm. It is not.
Sure.
And that question, that you never know who's listening. It's not about how many people, it's who is listening. That's the model that I live by.
Yes, quality over quantity. Anytime. I will take quality over quantity at any given day, any given moment, all day long.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. Same here.
When we talked to Trop a couple of years ago the first time, we asked about how he got the placement with Ross, you know, working with him. You know, it was just hard work, and you never know who's paying attention, you know. And, you know, we got so much love for MMG, you know, Smoke Bulger, you know, Billboard, Benny, all the direct affiliates, you know, all the direct members or affiliates we're in contact with at one point or another, you know. So it's like, yeah, MMG has always been supportive of Austin Talk Radio, and in turn, we support Maybach Music Group, you know. And like I said, Trop is just one of them guys that has always been accessible for us. You know, we've always been able to contact him if we needed something, you know. And his boys, you know, John, you know, and Nick, you know, they are tremendous as well, you know. So this is about how we build these relationships in terms of being able to facilitate growth. On this show, I just love this dialogue in terms of this type of fellowship. You know, one thing about it is on Off the Cuff Radio, we are very, very open about anybody coming on. You know, we do not care. I've said before, our motto is no guest too big, no guest too small. If you're dope music or just a dope person in general, you got a story to tell, we'll have you on the show. Always, and I'm going to tell this story again. I was, for the millionth time, I was in a barbershop one day. This is the same night that we had Big Spook on, OG Spook, who's Jay Prince's best friend from Rap-A-Lot. And me and my barber talking about who we got on the show that night, and this local artist comes just over his ear hustling the conversation. So he want to talk about, he just come out saying that he ain't, you know, he want to be on the show too. So my thing is, I'm always going to be calm, because that's just me. I'm like, okay, you know, well, let me holler my brother King, and we'll see what's what, you know. And then, you know, then I tried to get on his IG page, because I didn't know how the algorithms work back then, because you have to have a certain amount of followers, and you can't be following too many or the fail-safe kids.
Yeah, we like that.
IG has a setting. Yeah, y'all know how it goes. So it's like, you may try to follow somebody, if you're following too many people, they might have a fail-safe on you as a bot. You're not, but they won't let you follow. So I didn't know this at the time. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to follow his page, so he makes a crack about, oh, you one of those people that have people follow you, but you don't follow them back. I'm looking at him like, nigga, what? So I'm thinking to myself, because I'm not going to
take this Instagram thing serious.
Yeah, so I'm thinking to myself, look, nigga, you asked us to be on the show. We didn't ask you, you know.
Funny thing is, even with a lot of people that I had on, some people just happen to be old school. They don't do the Instagram thing like that. They don't follow me, but I got their personal number, so I don't take an issue at all. Like,
right.
But these niggas, they can make feelings. Oh, you ain't follow me back. I'm like, I don't even know how to work it. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I'm just now, I'm a dinosaur this.
Right. And then, Nate, this is something that I think you really, really understand from the level of respect. He never bothered to shake my hand to introduce himself.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Oh, yeah,
Wow.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. And
good luck with that, career, buddy.
And he's still stuck in the same place he was at 4 years ago. Look. We have interviewed, on this show, because this is one of the times that we get to brag a little bit, and we've been blessed, so we don't say it out of arrogance. We say this out of accomplishment. We have had Douglas Century on twice, a best-selling New York Times author, author of Split Decision. He wrote Ice-T's biography that was released back in 2011, and then he co-wrote his book with Ice-T and his best friend Spike, Split Decision, and also The Hunt for El Chapo and The Boss, The Last Boss of Brighton, about Boris Nayfield, the one of the last OG Russian mafia guys, the big one, we've interviewed the late, great Louis Rankin. You know, we've interviewed DJ Yellow. We've interviewed Spice One. We have been so abundantly blessed to have the people we've had on our show. We're pushing 600 shows. We're living the dream right now.
I want to say this for bragging rights. And we ain't had to pay nobody, like certain shows. We ain't got to pay nobody. It's all respect.
They come on because they want to come on.
Wow, that's amazing.
I won't pay them no way, but at the same time, it's just respect.
Yeah,
That was already out the door. I'm like, look, there ain't no conversation here. You either come on or you're not.
Mm-hmm.
This is one thing about how great of a guy Trop is, because when we first had him on, and I talked to him off air, this is how solid of a guy he is. He told us about a couple of his friends that he wanted to get them on the show to help them get out there. And I was like, of course we'll get them on the show. Took a little bit, but we got him on. But I'm like, he is always looking out for everybody to make sure they're okay. And that is what a lot of times is missing in the game, because everybody's worried about people getting ahead of them. I'm like, no, when one of us win, we all cross that finish line together.
Yeah.
Because that allows you to stand on that podium and bring the other people up with you. And the marathon that Nipsey ran, rest in peace. Shout out to Mike and Keith, Hatman the Gunman, Jay Stone, rest in peace to G.I. Joe. We had him on a couple years ago. We embody that spirit. You know, my guy Mars, all of them, you know, in that marathon clique. Shout out to L.A., shout out to Crenshaw, shout out to the 60s. That's it's about us building communities, helping each other along, and not being selfish, but supportive. Being an obstacle, but being the one to help somebody overcome that obstacle. Not the blocker, but the person that leads the block to help that person score the touchdown.
Absolutely.
Amen to that. Oh, man, we almost got to get ready to bounce, man. Any other shout-outs y'all want to give out? Quick.
Definitely. Before we bounce, I just want to say shout-out to all the females in the industry, man. Killing it, man. The females, the artists, the writers, like, y'all got the best taste. And I always listen to what the females got to say for sure. So, yeah, I just want to say that.
Definitely, man. We definitely enjoyed the bill.
Definitely. Nate, perhaps you and Trop can link up offline in terms of chopping up some business or what have you.
Absolutely. I'd appreciate it. I need your Instagram, if that's okay.
Definitely, Trop Da Vinci. I think I just seen your IG. I followed you back. Is it
Okay, I see you. Yes, I'm following you. All right, perfect. Good, good. Perfect, perfect, perfect. Yes, absolutely. I'm up for it. I like what you guys are saying. You don't come across that many people who have the same ideas that you have as far as, you know, not being selfish. You know, there's a lane for each of us, you know. Even we may have similarities, but ultimately, you know, our sauces are different, but that doesn't mean that we can't blend or mesh together well with regards right. to business. And like you said, when you get there, you know, you gotta reach back down. You have to reach back down. You can't just get there and stay there because somebody reached down for you. So the idea is when you get there, go back and get some people. Go back and get the kind of people that want to be there, the kind of people that are willing to do the work, you know. And if you can encourage someone along the way to, you know, get out of being in a place of complacency and it works, then that's a win for everybody. We all win. When one of us win, we all win. And I feel that so strongly. That's always been my mentality. When one of us win, we all win. So thank you guys for having me. I appreciate you very much.
Drop your Instagram for those who listen to the show so they can follow you as well.
Yes, it's well, I have several pages. So I don't know if you want me to mention all of that. So,
that's your main one.
My main page is at nay.rodriguez _215. That's RODRIGUEZ _215.
Okay.
There you go.
And there we definitely. One thing about Off the Cuff, this is a worldwide thing. And, you know, for being ambassadors of the culture, we know and we understand the assignment.
Yeah.
We've done our homework. But the only thing we got to do is just go out and spread the education of excellence. But, you know, people like yourself, Nay, Trop, you all make us what we are today. There is no us without y'all, you know, because,
absolutely.
You know, y'all come on the show and, you know, we're a platform to where, like I said, you know, you come correct. We come with great conversation. So that's, we just put that word out to everybody, you know. We got open and all. We got, you come here, you're home. But we also have the right to refuse people who don't come correct either. And we have on more than one occasion.
yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys, man.
Trop, you know, you're always home here, man. Yeah, you know, yeah. And,
yeah,
Trop, you know,
love,
before,
much
before,
love.
Trop, you got anybody else? You know, look, you work with any other artists, man, bring them by the show. Nay, you got anybody for us? You know how to reach us, and we'll definitely make it happen.
You. Okay, perfect.
Got you.
Definitely.
All right, y'all. Out of here. Catch y'all again next week. Holla.
All right, holla. Perfect. All right.
Peace.